Welcome to College Football Roundtable, your source for college football coverage, including major storylines,
playoffs,
can't miss game previews, and picks each week. Join your hosts, Dan, Rob, and Jordan at the roundtable for a show unlike anything else. As for Football presents the College Football Roundtable.
Welcome back, everyone, and happy Veterans Day. We're going to try and be your pregame before you go out and get your free meal. So if you're going to go watch a football game, might as well do it at one of the many establishments that are giving veterans free food. So you can save a little bit on that tab and buy more beer. Anyway, the top-ranked team in the American Conference lost this past weekend, but I don't think that's the last shakeup we'll see before Selection Sunday. And in a move that we haven't seen since the program, a quarterback on a Heisman Trophy campaign mysteriously is absent from a big game. What's up, Trash Talkers? Welcome back to the College Football Roundtable, or if you prefer, you can call it Ring Knock Radio. I'm your host, Rob the Angry Colonel, calling to you from Waikiki, Hawaii. We got Dan Ikebasa calling to you from Coastal Connecticut, and Trigger Joe from the home of the Big House. Gentlemen, how we doing? What do we watch this weekend? We'll start with Dan, go over to Joe, and then I'll wrap.
I have unfortunately been under the weather all day, which scuttled our plans to go out and get a free beer at the local beer place, so I was sad about that. But I'm finally feeling a little better now. As you know, I went to the Army game on Saturday, and damn, that thing stayed nerve-wracking throughout. We talked about that quite a bit on the other show, but it was nuts. We then set up a television up in the lots and caught the end of the Indiana Penn State game, which was also nuts. That had to be the game of the year. I mean, holy smokes. And then finally, we put on Texas A&M and watched the Aggies just murder Mizzou. And then I was driving home. I mostly listened to UConn beat Duke in what might actually be the game of the decade for Huskies fans. They had over 38,000 fans at Rensselaer Field on Saturday. Biggest crowd since 2013. Yeah. Biggest crowd since 2013. So,
sorry.
That's all right.
That's you, Joe. How about you?
I was just looking at that before the show, and I have a blurting problem. That's why I'm an NCO, not an officer. But I was just looking at that, man, that was a great game for UConn, 37-34. But, you know, I got to see one of my picks go down as Memphis couldn't keep up with Tulane Friday night. I did not see that coming. I also kind of have a different take on the Penn State versus Indiana game than I've heard from some. A lot of people think that it was Indiana choking, and I say no. I say that was the last stand of a team who was tired of being kicked around and that had a ton of talent, and I'm talking about Penn State. That was the best game they had in them, and if we all remember, they were a preseason top five, I think, if not top three. So they have the talent. Fernando Mendoza refuses to lose and refuses to panic, and a smart, calm quarterback is a dangerous dude. And I think we can all agree that that Auburn-Vanderbilt game isn't getting its flowers because of the Indiana-Penn State game. But what an insane game that was from Diego Pavia again. I mean, talk about refuse to lose. I'll have more to say about those guys later. But, that was the main focus, was the Penn State-Indiana game. And then Vanderbilt and Auburn was unreal. I think that it went into OT. I think the final was 45-38.
Yeah, there's some great college football again this weekend, and I think it's interesting to see. And we're talking about that on the Army football show, is how, you know, some divisions in college football, our conferences, are adjusting their schedule to have their more higher power matchups after Week 10. And by doing that, what it does is it brings more eyeballs into your conference. But the other part of it is it sets you up for success, because if you're playing against really stiff competition going into, you know, the selection committee, that eye test matters a lot. You know, they're, you know, I hate to say it, and I've said it before, but like, the college football playoff is basically, you know, the BCS with different paint. But, but at least they're looking at strength of schedule, like quality wins and losses are starting to impact those decisions.
And that respect to Vandy for coming off that Texas loss and not laying an egg. Because you've seen teams do that before. I know that was heartbreaking. That Texas game, 34-31, that was a heartbreaker for them. And to come out and beat Auburn after Auburn put up one hell of a fight just shows what kind of a quarterback Pavia is. And I'm interested to see what they do in the playoffs, if they can win out and make it there.
Yeah, I think they have a pretty strong chance. And the way that it's going is we're probably going to see, you know, two to three Big 12 teams two teams from the Big Ten and 2-3 from the SEC at the very least going into the playoff this year. But for me, I had to watch an Army, you know, hold off a Temple team. And I say hold off. They probably could have scored on that last drive. But, you know, hey, which would you rather have, victory formation or an extra touchdown? And I think, you know, if we learned anything from watching Mario Cristobal boot it, trying to score a touchdown at the end of the game and having Georgia Tech come back on them, right? You take the victory formation, kneel it out, run the clock out, win the game. Yep. Then I watched the Buckeyes continue to roll. I mean,
they're boring. They're so good.
Yeah. It's not exciting to watch their games, but about for like the first half. And it's like, hey, how many touchdowns is Jeremiah Smith going to catch before they sit him down? You know, and then I watched Indiana do their best Oregon Ducks impersonation. But like Joe said, I think that was just the quality of competition. I think Penn State kind of realized it's like, yeah, we're a contender if we play like it.
And respect to them, because Indiana had destroyed everybody they'd played up until then. So respect to Penn State for not laying down in front of their home fans. You know, I give those kids all the credit in the world for having such a gutsy performance.
Yeah, and you have to look at it. It's in a very difficult situation right now. Like, really, you know, what Penn State is playing for, and this kind of alludes to what we're going to talk about in the topic today. But, like, you have to play tough in these last few games because guess what? Like, the transfer portal is open. Like, dudes are dropping like flies already. And, you know, if a guy is not comfortable with the outcome of his team, he's going to leave. And then, of course, I watched the episode of Navy Notre Dame, but it was an unsolved mystery of, like, why QB1, who's supposedly a Heisman contender, just all of a sudden vanishes. And it's like, I mean, we talked about it before. Was it a business decision? Probably was, because it's like, hey, let's preserve this guy for the rest of his schedule. But if you're looking at the way that Navy has played with Blake Horvath versus without him, you assumed a big risk. And like, if like, you're trying
daily for Army last year,
yeah, like if you're trying to, you know, if you're trying to make your case for a national championship or a playoff bid, you have to keep all your, you know, you got to keep your heavy hitters in the game in order to get the best chance to win, or at least the best showing. Because, like, hey, if you lose by 3 to Notre Dame, then that's going to get people looking at your team. If you lose by 30 and your starting quarterback's out, you know, all the sickos are going to know why, but like the average casual fan is not going to understand, like, well, why is the Navy quarterback not in the game and impacted? But speaking of somebody that is always in the game, to help you find your next home, we have a sponsor here. If you listen to this show, where you're PCSing to the Fort Bragg area, we have the realtor for you, Jocelyn Bradley. Jocelyn is a member of the Long Gray Line and graduate of the class of 2010. She served as an Army logistics officer, where she honed her passion for making an impact on people's lives. Now as a dedicated realtor, she brings you the same commitment when trying to find your dream home. Jocelyn provides exceptional personalized service to ensure a seamless home buying experience that's tailored to your needs. Beyond Fort Bragg, Jocelyn has an extensive network of trust and veteran realtors that span across the country, and they're ready to support you no matter where you're PCSing to. So if you're relocating locally or across the country, Jocelyn makes recommendations at no cost, and she'll connect you to a professional of integrity in any market that you're going to. As a proud supporter of Ask for Football, Jocelyn's supporting us, and she's a realtor that you can trust to get you into your home. Reach out to her today and let your next move be effortless. Over to you, Dano, for the Service Academy standings. Thanks.
Well, yeah, as we just said, Army is 5-4, having beat a very good Temple team at Mikey Stadium this past weekend, 14-13. Rob said it wasn't the best game on the scoreboard. I thought it looked pretty good on the scoreboard myself. Of course, we covered this one in depth on the Army football show. The Black Knights are off this weekend, which is in a way sort of unfortunate, and they then take on Tulsa on November 22nd. Navy is now 7-2, having dropped its second in a row to Notre Dame. Again, where was Blake Horvath? No one knows. They scratched him right before the game. The Mids take on USF this coming weekend in what might be a preview of the American Conference Championship, but probably won't be. We'll get into that a little bit later, even if the Mids do pull themselves out of the spiral. And finally, Air Force is 3-6. They got the post-Army loss bump as they took down San Jose State with their best defensive performance in the year. They beat Coach Ken's squad 26-16. If they win out, they'll go bowling. They have to play at UConn this weekend. So if they can somehow beat the Huskies, they got a pretty good chance of making it to that bowl game. The Coast Guard Academy is now 7-2, having lost a tough one to Springfield, 30-10. They take on the Mariners of the Merchant Marine Academy at Fenway Park on ESPN+. That looks like it's going to be a big event since they're hosting it at Fenway Park. I talked to one of the Coasties up at the West Point this weekend about it. He was very fired up. And then finally, the Merchant Marine Academy is 6-2, having beat Worcester Polytechnic 34-14 in their last contest heading into the Secretary's Cup. If they win, the teams will have identical records, which Rob thinks would be cool. I'm sure Coasties would like to just have the better record. So anyway, we'll see what happens.
Yeah, for sure. I think that's going to be good. And like they're building this thing up. So they're doing like a whole fan fest that starts on Friday that runs into the game. And like being completely honest, man, there's something in the water at Springfield. Because even their sprint team is good, because that's one of the few sprint teams that score points on the Army sprint team this year. And so there's something in the water at Springfield that makes them very, very competitive. So I just find that super, super interesting. Speaking of competition, this is a competition that you don't want to be in. That's for the Blue Falcon of the Week.
Look, it's the Blue Falcon.
Ooh. Ooh. Over to you, Joe.
Yeah. This isn't going to be super original, and I thought I'd go about it a different way. And can we all just have a conversation about Brian Kelly and how toxic he seems to be everywhere he goes? I mean, it goes without saying that he's the Blue Falcon in college football this month. He took the bullet for James Franklin, apparently. And you know this guy. He was the guy in the green polo in his first year and the red face, screaming at an 18-year-old like he was about to pass out. And then he doesn't produce, goes to a new school where he doesn't produce either, and he's still screaming at the same players, not getting, leaving them completely rudderless midseason, getting fired. And then all these players are coming out saying, you know, after I got injured, he stopped talking to me. And as someone who's coached on any level, I cannot imagine doing that to one of my players at that level. And several guys have come out and said, once I was injured, I never heard from him again. We haven't talked since. And that blows my mind. And I think the veil is off on Brian Kelly. And the fact that he's suing LSU and still keeping himself in the limelight is going to blow up in his face. So I just wanted to go, you know, see what your guys' take on it was, because he has seemed to leave everywhere he goes in a worse position and be very angry on his way out doing it. So I don't know. Do you think that there's another chance this guy comes back?
I don't know, man. Like it's funny because we joke about it. We talked about Coach O a couple weeks ago. Like, hey, when is Orgeron going to come back? Like that guy was kind of a fun dude. Like, yeah, he may have had his own stuff like off the field, but as a coach, he was a pretty good coach and he did decent player development. And like, I guess everything withstanding is probably the reason why he hasn't come back. But like, you don't hear people just like completely rolling their eyes and going, oh, I hate this dude. Like they are with Coach Kelly. And even, you know, Chip Kelly is, you know, Chip at least was smart enough and was like, well, I'm going to earn my way back into a head coaching spot. So I go to Ohio State and call plays for a year. And, you know, the offense is incredible. They do a great job. And then, you know, some university comes knocking. And I think that's really probably the best thing that for Brian Kelly to do is probably take a year off. Like, dude, I think it's like his payout is like $26 million. What are you arguing with the university?
Like at LSU, I mean, you've got alumni like Malik Nabers, Justin Jefferson, Jamar Chase, Joe Burrows, and they don't want to come back. Like, like when you lose that alumni, you lose another pipeline. And guess what? That's who those kids want to be. The one percenters, the top guys that LSU used to get, they want to be Justin Jefferson. And when those guys are saying, yeah, I'm not coming by to help out the program as long as he's there, you have a real problem. And I think Brian Kelly's got a people problem.
Yeah. And again, like we try and give people, you know, give people the benefit of the doubt, throw them some grace and be like, hey, like maybe he's just a little bit off putting or whatnot, you know, but typically what we end up seeing happening is like with these coaches' salaries right now and name, image and likeness, you would be better off finding a no name coach and paying him like $2 or $3 million that has just had solid fundamentals to get your team and can recruit, than spending $20 million that's going to put your school in debt for the next 6 years to cover down on, you know, some dude that's really not a great coaching person.
You know, that's funny because when you think about it, the NIL money, that affects, that's affected by who the coach is.
Yep.
you know, 100%. Big time. And it's affected by what kind of traffic he's bringing to the university. And when it's all bad, I can't think of the guy's name, and I'm embarrassed that I can't, but he went on Ryan Clark's podcast or show, and Ryan Clark, when they came off, when the kid left the room, he was in tears because the kid had some kind of a brain issue, and he didn't come out of it. He never played again. And he had like the best attitude, and they asked his dad, and you know, the kid's going to have severe special needs for the rest of his life. And I'm sensitive to that. Cause I've got a son who's got special needs, and it's just like, how can you forget about a guy like that? He's got a great attitude. He's not bitter about leaving the game and the game being taken from him. And his dad's like, yeah, we never heard from coach while he was laying up in the hospital fighting for his life. And it's just, to me, that makes no sense. Those are supposed to be your kids.
If I had to guess, I would say that the guy just doesn't want to work anymore. And that if he sues and gets all the money that's contractually in his contract, that he's going to be able to lay up on the couch for the rest of his life.
Yeah, I think that kind of just makes him an a-hole, in my opinion. But anyways, yeah. Brian Kelly earned the Blue Falcon two times this season. And I think he needs to take a break, go focus on the grandkids for a little bit and come back when you've calmed down.
That's true. I think it's interesting because like we're watching all the comebacks of like these coaches that move to different places and they still do great. And typically it's because, you know, it's like, look, if you ever want to follow somebody that's interesting on social media, follow Lane Kiffin. Dude's funny, right? He's posting memes and roasting people. And then on top of everything else, he's a good coach, right? And so, like, yeah, Ole Miss probably, you know, may not win the freaking SEC this year, but eventually they're going to get to that point and break into that next tier of performance. But it all has to do with, you know, people liking the coach and wanting to support the team.
Sure.
All right, so moving on for a more upbeat note.
I drank a beer.
All right.
On to the hold my beer and watch
this. Let me Bob Ross it for you. Okay. That's my slang for let me paint this picture. It's University Park, Beaver Stadium. There's 105-231 in attendance. The home underdog Nittany Lions have just taken the lead for the first time in the game. And with 6:27 left, Indiana can see their collective playoff hopes slipping away and hanging in the balance. They get the ball back with 80 yards in front of them. Drive starts out with a sack. Do they panic? No, they do not. Next play, 22-yard dart to Omar Cooper Jr. Remember that name. Then a 12-yarder. Then after a few incompletions, Mendoza hooks up with the tight end for 29 yards. Then after a 17-yarder and three incompletions, Indiana is down to their last play. It's fourth down, and that's when Omar Cooper Jr. said, you guessed it, hold my beer, watch this. Went airborne to come down with a 7-yard dart from Mendoza and then lands with a toe tap that would make ballerinas jealous. Omar Cooper, I will definitely hold your beer, sir, because that was one hell of a catch for all the marbles.
Yeah, that was a pretty impressive performance. And like I said, Indiana's on a mission this year. And, you know, last year when they were undefeated, you know, up until like, was it week 7 or 8? And everybody was kind of like, are these guys for real or not? But, like, I think collectively as college football observers, we can say that Kurt Cignetti has something going on at Indiana.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
You know, and I think that that's good in many ways because if the football team is good, then, you know, you get better basketball recruits and other recruits in other sports. There's more money coming in, and we're slowly starting to watch Indiana's profile start to raise, not only in just basketball, because everybody's seen Hoosiers, right? But now we're getting to the point where – you know, where everybody's getting to the point now where people are watching the football games too, right? And like that's the thing.
First Media has figured out the algorithm, that's for sure, because the amount of attention he's brought to the Indiana Hoosiers football program in such a short time is insane. Let's not forget, Michael Penix Jr. was the quarterback at Indiana before he transferred to Washington. Indiana was a team nobody wanted to play and nobody talked about. And then they started winning every game, not just playing up to their opponent's potential. And Cignetti, man, he's cracked the code. Because, like, talking about Mendoza and these receivers, they forget Roman Henby's probably going to play in the NFL. That's their running back, and he's an absolute truck house. He's like 6'2", 210. And it seems like those guys have been playing there. They've got several key guys that have been there for years. And you know how scarce that is nowadays.
Yeah, for sure. And speaking of things that are scarce, let's talk about the scarce movement in the top 10 this week.
Oh my God. I had a rant and I never have done this before the top 10, but I'm going to say something. We've been doing the show, the three of us, as a core for about 4 years, and I've primarily been doing the top 10 in those years. Never in the history of me doing this have I ever had 2 weeks back-to-back where the top five or top seven teams did not change until last week and this week. Something doesn't smell right, and that is all I'm going to say about that. So moving on to the top 10, I feel a playoff placeholding narrative might be in place that can't be disturbed or something like that, and I don't want to believe it yet. But at number one, we got Ohio State. No change, obviously. The Buckeyes are clearly the number one team in the country, and they just keep beating people convincingly and covering spreads. They handled Purdue on their home field 34-10. The UCLA Bruins get to come into Columbus in November and play the Buckeyes on Saturday. I hope they enjoy their stay in the Midwest. Should be about 12 degrees. Ohio State's a 32-point favorite. Number two, we got the Hoosiers of Indiana. They had quite the scare as the Hoosiers got much, much more than they bargained for from Penn State on Saturday. It took Mendoza's pass and the miracle catch to win on the last play, 27-24 in a thriller. Wisconsin comes to Indiana on Saturday, and it seems like Wisconsin can't catch a freaking break in the last 4 weeks. Yeah. God, it's been Ohio State, Oregon, Indiana. But the spread on that is 30. So at number three, we got Texas A&M. The Aggies, in my opinion, had the most impressive win on Saturday, going to ranked Mizzou and winning by 21 points, 38-17 in dominant fashion. South Carolina comes to town Saturday. A&M's an 18.5-point favorite. Number four, we got the Crimson Tide of Alabama. They got it done Saturday. It wasn't pretty, but they beat LSU 20-9. But they are Alabama is on a historic run of headhunting for ranked opponents. Ever since Kalen DeBoer's job was being threatened, and they play Oklahoma on Saturday, they are a 6.5-point favorite. So nothing but it's been a solid SEC run for Alabama. No denying that. The number five, we got Georgia. The Bulldogs won an impressive fashion at Mississippi State 41-21 to keep their national title season hopes alive. They have number 11 Texas and Arch Manning coming to town to play between the hedges on Saturday. Georgia's 6.5-point favorite. At number six, we got Oregon. The Ducks got quite a scare as well on Saturday as they traveled to Iowa to play the dream killer Hawkeyes. The Ducks needed some late magic to come back and win 18-16 to keep their season alive. Minnesota goes to Oregon on Saturday, where they are a 25.5-point underdog. Number seven, we got Ole Miss. The Rebels really tuned up the Citadel, 49-0. You proud of yourself, Lane? All right. How about a real team this week? Florida comes to town on Saturday, where Ole Miss is a 15.5-point favorite. Number eight, we got Texas Tech, and what a number they did on BYU. I did not see that coming. 29-7 in dominant fashion. They have a serious defense. They did pay for it as well. UCF comes to town on Saturday where the spread is 23.5. At number nine, we got the Irish and Notre Dame. They jump up one and made short work of our brethren in arms, Navy, 49-10. Good. Nice job, boys. I'm just kidding. Sorry, I had to get one shot in. Notre Dame goes on the road to play a ranked team on Saturday in number 20 Pittsburgh. So I don't know if there's any challenge there, but Notre Dame is an 11.5-point favorite. So maybe that home dog money will be flowing. At number 10, we got the Texas Longhorns. They slid into the 10 spot on their week off as their Vanderbilt victory is aging well on the arm of Diego Pavia, who went out and beat Auburn. Texas has to travel between the hedges to play Georgia, where they're 6.5-point dogs on Saturday.
Yeah, I saw a college football thing they were talking about with Lane Kiffin, or not Lane Kiffin, but John Gruden. John Gruden was like, look, if I wanted to be a football player or coach, I want to coach in the SEC and beat Georgia. He's like, because I want to travel on the road and beat Georgia in between the hedges. He's like, that's kind of like the most poetic way to win a college football game. So if you're a college football player in the SEC, that's where you want to do it and want to win. I thought that was pretty interesting. I think Gruden's going to make a run into the NFL, into college football at some point. There's a lot of coaching vacancies. Yeah, there's a lot of coaching vacancies, you know, and he's a good coach. He's an analyst. He's popular. Like if you're, you know, kid that watches a lot of football stuff, you've seen him before. So I think that would make a great opportunity for him to recruit and develop a team. Moving on to top 25 losses this week, got 59 total. And I think the bloodletting is going to continue, but talk about Texas A&M. Like that was a slobber knocker on Mizzou. And like statistically, Texas A&M is the best team in the country. They should be. Like, if they were to base it based off of all the assessment criteria of the College Football Playoff Committee, Texas A&M would be number one. But it's kind of hard to put them, you know, over the Buckeyes and over Indiana. Like, they probably could have done it this week. They could have moved them up to number two, but I just don't know why they didn't do that. Texas Tech fraud check, BYU, we talked about that one. The Ducks barely hung on.
I was texting during that game when Iowa went up, and there wasn't much time left.
Yeah, I was super impressed that they were able to keep it together for that long and kind of close that game out. Wake Forest shows that they are secretly fans of the Fighting Haynes Kings and took out Virginia 16-9, keeping Georgia Tech's hopes alive for ACC championship. Cal upset Louisville 29-26. I'm just going to reference my picks last week because I think I may have mentioned that one. And I think all the talk of Luke Fickell getting a buyout kind of lit a fire up either underneath him or the rest of the team. And they upset Washington 13-10. Wasn't impressive, but they got the job done. And another ranked team goes the way of the Dodo. But moving on, it kind of popped up in my feed this week because I was watching, you know, looking for some college football news. And the thing that really struck me was the fact that Dylan Edwards, who's, you know, been a standout player basically his entire college career, has opted to take a medical redshirt because he hasn't played in four games out of K-State and is actively looking for a new team in a transfer portal. So let's talk about which marquee players that we've been tracking that we think may end up somewhere else or are already in the portal. So we'll start with Dan, go over to Joe, and all that. Thanks.
Before we get into that, I think Texas A&M's problem is that all the marquee teams that they scheduled haven't looked like marquee teams. So you look at their wins, their best win is Notre Dame. But they also beat Auburn, Florida, and LSU in any normal year. That would look pretty good. This particular year, it's like, well, yeah, but who have you played? Like, seriously? Who have they played? Yeah. But anyway. So,
yeah, that's fair.
Yeah, I mean, it's not their fault, but they don't have Georgia and they don't have Alabama on their schedule. So what can you do?
Yeah.
Okay. So any of the high leverage players from disappointing teams like Auburn, LSU, or Florida are probably my most likely to get paid in the portal guys. So Florida edge rusher Cameron James has 3.5 sacks and 2 passes defensed, making him ostensibly the best pass rusher for any of those three schools. He gets my vote. Like, I'm a little surprised the dude's not already out the door. It's going to cost a lot to keep him there, I think. So yeah, I mean, edge rusher is hard to buy, and he's going to be a good one.
Yeah. And I mean, the kid's solid. And like, when you think about like the top defensive players or the guys that get the most recognition, it's edge rushers these days, right?
Yeah, for sure.
Exceptions. Yeah. You know, with few exceptions, I mean, like, yeah, I think we can all acknowledge that Travis Hunter was just an anomaly, and because he played both ways, that's what made him like kind of get the defensive shine on them. But typically you don't see a lot of good, you know, defensive dudes. And when people are talking about them, they're usually edge rushers and they're usually pretty good. Joe, who you got?
Did you see what Travis Hunter did in his first game where they said, we're going to actually showcase Travis Hunter?
Yeah.
10 catches, 120 yards and a touchdown.
Nice.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I'm voting for the kid, man. He's a good kid. He's just a little different.
Yeah. I mean, you have
got
to be.
You can tell he's got a good heart, and the kid is, he's got a good brain for the game.
Yeah, for sure.
So, but you know, I can't say who will, but I can say who should enter the transfer portal and who would make a big splash. A guy I've been following since high school is Elijah Brown, and you might not even have heard of him, but he would make a huge splash. He's a quarterback at Stanford, but he comes from modern day high school that produced JT Daniels and Bryce Young. And he was one of the biggest quarterback commits when he came out, but for some reason he committed to Stanford. He's barely sniffed the field for them. And it just doesn't seem like the coaching staff has a lot of faith in him, even though he was a very highly talented recruit out of high school. And we all know what a mess Stanford is. I think if this kid could transfer and start at a number of Power 4 teams or just go ball out at a Group of 5 team and have fun. I think he has all the talent in the world, and I believe it's wasted at Stanford. So you could hear the name Elijah Brown starting for a team next year. And there's also rumors of Dante Moore at Oregon. Does he have another year of eligibility?
Yeah, I think he might.
I heard that there's rumors of him talking about it. It's like, dude, you can't go a whole lot farther up, buddy.
Yeah. Well, and again, I think it's about satisfaction. Like a lot of these kids are it's a balance now.
Instant gratification.
Yeah. And that's what it is. Like, hey, I want people to know me and buy my jersey and that kind of thing. And so like my guy, of course, is the guy that started this whole thing, at least as the topic. So I noted Dylan Edwards, like medically redshirted last week. And then this week announced that he's entering the transfer portal. So he's got 2 years of eligibility left. He played for Coach Prime at Jackson State, and then he played for him at Colorado, transferred to Kansas or Kansas State, and now he's out the door with an injury. And like I would almost assume that he's going to get picked up relatively quickly, you know, after he gets a healthy prognosis, once they say like, yeah, he's good to go, like this nagging ankle injury. But how nagging is the injury is the first question, because like
exactly
that's what we're starting to run into with name, image, and likeness. Like kids are making business decisions, vice, you know, what's best for their team. And I can't really, you know, I can't really blame them, because they have to, you know, they have to think about their future as well. But I think he's probably the most marquee like running back that's going to be in the portal. And then again, if previous history has taught us anything, the main guys that are kind of bouncing and going to different schools are the are quarterbacks. You know, the quarterback is the number one position that is switching. And I would not be surprised with the loss of, you know, Dylan Edwards at K-State if Avery Johnson is out the door shortly thereafter too. And
yeah,
I think that's the cascading effect of name, image, and likeness. I'm surprised.
If you're sitting there paying your coach $50 million and you're spending another $50 million on players, and then it's like, oh, sorry, we lost to Army. Like, the local car dealership owner does not want to hear that. I'm giving you $50 million. Like, I need results. That's real money.
It's so true.
Yeah. Yeah, but that's what it boils down to is like now these guys have to produce and it's
bring the Tesla back on Monday, Lane.
I think it's becoming an issue for sure, but like it's scary to see like all that. Like if you go to any of the sites that track the transfer portal, it's just slowly starting to fill up. You know, and I get like if you're hurt and you're a medical guy and it doesn't look like, you know, if I'm the number one running back at whatever university, I get hurt, I'm out for a couple weeks, and then the number two guy steps up and starts blowing the doors off of it, and I know that I'm going to have a pretty stiff competition. Getting that number one spot back, even for the end of the year, let alone next season, maybe you opt out and find another opportunity. But again, like Dano said, like there's some dollars attached to that.
Yes.
Yeah. Not.
If I'm not giving cool. you this much money, you have to come through. Like, you have to come through.
Yeah. And I say this, and I've said it for years, I think the single best contract in the history of the NFL was Ricky Williams, because he had that super structured contract for performance. And I think you're gonna say
Albert Haynesworth.
Nah. But you know, I think that's probably the way that we need to go for name, image, and likeness. Is like if we're gonna have this as part of college football, start setting some gates on these things so the kids will pay more for performance and then tie it to the number of games that they're sitting in there, you know, but 6-1, half dozen to the other. But speaking of money and people that will apply it into ways that are beneficial to organizations, let's talk about Craig. Dana, over to you.
So friends, if you watch this show before or listen to us, you know that Craig Oxane is a mortgage broker. He is an area sales manager for the Money Store. He is a member of the West Point class of 1994, and he is one of the sponsors of this here program. Friends, Craig is an awesome mortgage broker. He's licensed to lend in all 50 states, but based out of Chicago. He is one of the most successful VA lenders in the country, going to give you super competitive rates and the best deal that he possibly can. But he is also going to give you super personal service. Like you can literally just call on the phone and talk to Craig because you have a question, which really matters because the mortgage process is super confusing. And if you don't have questions, I would be personally a little concerned for you. When you buy a house, you have to sign like 2 inches worth of paperwork. It's really otherworldly, the amount of paperwork that you have to sign, and it is scary as all hell. And yeah, that's one of those times when you'd like to be able to pick up the phone and ask a question to the dude who is doing your mortgage, and not a call sender and not some random big box bank or mindless website, but Craig Oxane. And this is how the West Point Network functions, right? Craig is helping us stay in business here at Ask for Football, and we're trying to help you get the best deal on a mortgage that we can by introducing you to the very man that you need to meet. Plus, Here we are on Veterans Day. Craig does not charge lending fees for veterans. That's a gigantic savings. It's like $1,300. Guys, save yourself $1,300. So Craig Oxane, area sales manager for the Money Store, check him out. His link is on our website. He and Jocelyn both have little business cards. You just click on those, fill out the little questionnaires or whatever. You'll be talking to either them, either Jocelyn or Craig in a couple of hours. It's too easy.
Thanks, Dano. And hey, let's talk about something that is near and dear to all our heart, the American Conference. All right, so games this week, we have USF at Navy, UTSA at Charlotte, Oregon State at Tulsa, North Texas at UAB, Memphis at ECU, FAU at Tulane. Dana, which game do you think is probably the most critical one in the American Conference this week?
Well, USF definitely cannot afford a letdown against Navy, because right now they have a pretty clear path to the conference championship and a pretty clear path to the playoff if they can just hold up their end. And they really, they have the best team, I think. Other than that, you know, I don't know. Memphis at ECU is interesting because ECU also only has one loss, and they could still, if things break right, make it into the conference championship. The one thing that's interesting is that Tulane and North Texas both have relatively easy schedules going forward. However, the college football playoff ranking is one of the biggest tiebreakers, and it seems pretty likely that we're going to need a tiebreaker. So that helps Tulane and South Florida a lot, and it hurts North Texas and East Carolina because neither of the Mean Green nor the Pirates have a Power Four win.
Yeah, I think one of the other parts of it too is like Memphis booted their own season.
Oh yeah, for sure.
They had plenty of opportunities, and then it slipped away, because I know when they did the first week of the playoff assessment or the playoff announcement, they were on the outside looking in, but they were holding down, you know, the spot for the group of five.
Yeah, and then, for sure.
Then they booted it, which is just amazing to me.
If somehow South Florida doesn't make it in, then I think that the American Conference might actually let that playoff spot slip away, because Tulane took, you know, every other team has a bad loss. South Florida's loss isn't a bad loss. So, you know, I don't know what to do with that.
Yeah, that's fair. So, hey, check it out, y'all. We've got football games tonight on Tuesday. So we got Maction, and it's just going to keep rolling for the rest of the week. So, your Veterans Day matchup is Kent State at Akron at 7:30 on ESPNU. You've got Ohio at Western Michigan at 8 on ESPN2. That's kicking off in about an hour and a half, 2 hours, roughly. We got games on Wednesday. You got Buffalo at Central Michigan. Like, hey, look, if you are a Army fan at all, go check out Coach Drinkle in his new spot, taking on the Buffalo Bulls. You got NIU at UMass, and that should be an interesting game. And then Toledo at Miami of Ohio. Guess what, folks? We got games on Thursday. Troy at Old Dominion, 7:30 on ESPN. And then moving into Friday, which is just crazy that they have these two matchups on Friday. Clemson at Louisville is going to play. That should be an interesting one, because Louisville is coming off of a loss, and Clemson is like probably the wildest roller coaster in the ACC right now. Minnesota at Oregon. I know they're going to Corvallis, man, but do not be surprised if Minnesota keeps that game a lot tighter than
I don't like that spread.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. Moving on to Saturday, early kicks. You got USF as Navy, as Dano mentioned. You got Air Force at UConn. I think both of those games are going to be great for service academies, for representation. South Carolina at Texas A&M. This is one of those games that could get tricky too, because South Carolina always starts turning into, you know, their version of the spoiler makers after week 10. And, you know, not to say that Texas A&M has looked vulnerable at any point. However, South Carolina just has that innate ability to make teams in the SEC look not as good. You know, it just turned into a sloppy game, and they may actually, you know, keep it closer, but they won't win, but it'll still be good. UTSA at Charlotte. UTSA has, you know, struggled on the road. So that's going to be a push probably statistically for between both of those teams. So it'll be interesting.
What a terrible loss that would be for UTSA, though. I mean, if they lose at Charlotte, they're like out of bowl contention.
Yeah, but nuts. And that's but the weirdest part about UTSA this season is they've done terrible on the road. So, like, if you're watching the American, like, if you're a UTSA fan, you're like, can we change this to a neutral field or to the home? Because, like, when they go on the road, it just doesn't work out. And so this one would be an interesting game. It's kicking at noon. It's going to be in Chicago. So you've got Michigan versus Northwestern. That's going to be a good game. Northwestern, surprisingly good this season. Michigan, we can – be honest and say they're probably in a rebuilding year, not so much on the defensive side, but on the offensive side with a young quarterback. He's getting his feet underneath them. He's had some good games, but he hasn't had a breakout performance yet. If he has a breakout performance in Northwestern, I think they'll be talking, you know, about him a little bit more at the end of the season. But, you know, right now, Michigan is in the driver's seat on that one, but anything can happen when you play Northwestern. Wisconsin at Indiana. Again, that's another interesting game is, you know, Indiana setting themselves up for a letdown. You had a tough game against an in-conference rival, and then you got the team that you should handily beat. Recipe for a trap. Notre Dame takes on Pitt. That's an old classic from, you know, back in the day when Rocket Ismail used to play for Notre Dame. And, like, when they would go into Pitt, those are always usually a slobber knocker. So if you are a fan of a good, you know, in-the-trenches kind of football game, watch Notre Dame at Pitt at noon on ABC.
Oh, yeah.
Moving on. Go ahead, Joe.
Oh, no, I was just saying moving that Pitt-Notre Dame game is going to be nasty.
Yeah, I think it will. So moving on to the early afternoon kicks at 3:30. You got a ranked-on-ranked matchup. You got Iowa versus USC. Hey, you know, they're going into California. Advantage probably is USC just because of the heat and temperature. But, you know, Iowa's good, man. They control the clock. Like, Iowa is probably the closest thing to Army and college football writ large. They just run the ball and control the clock, and they try and beat you on the last possession. I mean, they did the same thing to Oregon.
They held Oregon's offense to 12 points for most of the game.
Yeah, take the under on that one if you're betting on that game. You got UCF at Texas Tech. That should be an interesting contest. And then you got Oklahoma at Alabama. Hey, man, we'll see if the Crimson Tide can keep it up. And then you've got NC State at Miami, Florida. Hey, man, like, that's going to be a quarterback matchup. C.J. Bailey versus Carson Beck, whichever quarterback plays the most mistake-free football is going to win that game. We got Georgia Tech at Boston College. Again, like, Georgia Tech has been quiet since they took that loss a couple weeks ago. They got Boston College this week. You know, playing at Boston College is typically tough, and depending upon what the weather and that looks like, it could be a tighter game than imagined. You got Penn State at Michigan State. That's going to be on CBS and Paramount Plus. Like, this might be, you know, if the Indiana game for Penn State was like their last chance to show that they had a little bit of fight left in them, they have to roll Michigan State or their season's over. You know, I mean, like, just objectively the truth in that situation. You got Virginia at Duke, kick at 3:30 on ESPN2. You know, another weird one on the late slate. You got North Carolina at Wake Forest at 4:30 on the CW. Go figure. You got Purdue at Washington. Spoilermakers are going to try and upset Washington again. And then you got Florida at Ole Miss. That should be an interesting contest, but hey, it's going to go that way. Night game. This is just disrespectful for UCLA. You're putting that, you know, that Pier 6 beating on national television at 7:30. Thanks for helping my recruiting, guys. And then you got Texas and Georgia, and that's probably the best matchup of the night in the night slot. So if you had a choice between – if you only got one TV and you had a choice between UCLA and Ohio State and Texas and Georgia, watch Texas and Georgia. I think that's going to be the better contest to put your eyeballs on. And, yeah, that's it. And the late game, so, you know, the left coast game that kicks at 10:30, you got two of them. You got Wyoming at Fresno State at 10:30 on Fox Sports 1, and then you got Boise State and San Diego State trying to bounce back at 10:30 on the CBS Sports Network. So it's a lot of words, but guess what? We got college football, but we also have to do some picks.
Weekly Locks.
All right, we're moving to the Weekly Locks. We'll start with Dano and then go over to Joe, see what you guys got. Who you bet on this week?
I went 2-1 this past week. Air Force beat San Jose State, as we talked about, and UAB at Rice went way under, so that was good. North Carolina beat Stanford, but they didn't cover, so that sucked. But what can you do? My picks this week, USF minus 10.5 at Navy. I know that's a big line, but USF actually has an excellent rushing defense, and they typically don't play with their food. I mean, we saw that this past weekend. That's a team that does not screw around, and I think they know exactly what they have in front of them. Plus, I thought Navy looked tired against Notre Dame. Like, they just did not look good in any way, especially considering how good that team is, quote-unquote, supposed to be. I've also got North Texas at UAB under 69.5. I just do not think that the Blazers can hold up their end in that one. They improved because they went to the running game a little bit. That's not going to help. North Texas also has a much improved defense, if you didn't know it. And finally, I got Georgia minus six hosting Texas, looking for a low scoring game where the Dogs literally run away with it. Georgia's got their running game going. Their offense actually looked good in the first half this past week. They're very much still in the SEC and national championship conversation. Like, you don't have to talk about Georgia. Georgia's going to talk about you.
Yeah, that's fair. Joe, what you got?
Yeah, I went 1-2 last week thanks to a completely out of whack Indiana line, and Memphis just not looking like Memphis against Tulane. So at least Alabama handled business. It was ugly, but they did it. I have many more than three games I like this week, but Dano is just holding the line on how many he'll let me pick. So here's my three favorites. I did just change one of them, but this one I'm pretty solid on. Look, I got Virginia in a comeback spot, getting 6.5 points at Duke. I'm not really sure. I understand that Virginia lost to Wake. Wake's got a good defense. Having said that, Duke does not. UConn just hung 37 on them, and I think Virginia will be in this game to the very last snap. Take the Cavs and the points all day. I did have BYU, but I'm flipping it to my other pick. I'm taking USF minus 10.5 over Navy. The way USF looked and the way Navy looked, you just can't ignore it. Dan'll hit the nail on the head. There's no need to repeat that. I think USF walks away with that one somewhere in the 35-14 range. And then you're not going to believe this one, and it makes me want to take a shower after the show, but I have Northwestern plus 12.5 at home against my Michigan Wolverines. That's right. I said maybe a couple of bad weeks have triggered my fanhood. I don't know, but no, joking. I always pull for Michigan, but without Justice Haynes, and he is in a walking boot, they are a very vanilla offense right now, and I just don't see them dog walking a Northwestern team on their home field. Give me the Wolverines to win, but the Wildcats to cover, 28-17 Michigan.
Yeah, that's fair. I think that's a good assessment, man. I'm not gonna say that it's not. So
I think Michigan's running game will be all they have, and they're gonna have to string together some long drives that eat a lot of clock. So
yeah, I think that's a recipe for success to take the pressure off of Bryce Underwood. Like, again, you got a 19-year-old kid trying to win football games, but he needs supporting cast to do it. I mean, yep. That's just standard. I went 2-1 this week, and I too got clipped up by the Indiana game versus Penn State. That win by three was just not enough. Syracuse did cover 28.5 against Miami by a hook, thank goodness. And Cal won outright against Louisville. So this week I'm picking Louisville to cover three against Clemson. I think the Cardinals will bounce back after getting bit by Cal. I mean, and again, Clemson is too inconsistent. Like, if this was Clemson of 5 years ago, that's probably not a safe bet. But the way that Clemson has played this year, they've been playing, you know, they played down.
They've got a lot to play for.
Yeah. They played down against good competition, and Louisville has quietly put together a really good season, and they need this win to continue to be, you know, in the conversation for things beyond the actual season. Take Minnesota to cover 23.5, man. Like, look, I got it. They're going to Corvallis. Oregon looked bad. They could not get their offense going. PJ Fleck will sneak up and freaking shiv you in the kidney if you are not paying attention. They will come back and get you. I legitimately think that, Minnesota is going to go in and they're going to keep it close. I mean, maybe win by a touchdown or lose in overtime just because, like, that's a great marquee matchup. And you know, if you go too hard in on the money line or on the points on Minnesota, they always typically deliver. And Oregon doesn't look as good. Oregon's just not the team that they were last year and in previous years. And then I'm going to flip the script and go a different way. I'm going to say take the over with the 63.5 of USF and Navy. And the reason why I say that is because USF defense is super, super opportunistic. Like, if you watch that last game last Friday, they had 14 points before their offense even hit the field. And, like, they basically went a quarter – it was like a quarter and a half with no offense from USF. And the reason why the offense wasn't on the field is because the defense was scoring so many points that they were just right back on the field over and over again. And I think with Navy being a little nicked up, looking kind of out of sorts against Notre Dame, I think it's a recipe for the USF defense to really put some, put something on them. So we'll see what happens. I think, you know, USF is going to hang some more points because they have to. I mean, that's their message to the audience. It's like, hey, look, we're going to crush these dudes and continue to win football games. But those are my picks. And hey, folks, like, we are at the end of the show, if you can believe it. There's football coming up shortly. So, you know, grab your significant other, grab your keys, go to one of the numerous restaurants that are feeding veterans for free. If you're a veteran, if not, you know, Stolen Valor is a thing, but I'm not telling you to go out and pretend that you're pretend to get a free dessert, but it's been done before. Anyway, this weekend, if you have opportunity, Army football, the varsity team is off this week. They have a bye. So the Sprint football team is playing their final game of the season. It's going to be against Navy down at the stadium. Both the cadets and the midshipmen have looked amazing in their competition up until this point. And essentially, it's a de facto national championship game between Army and Navy. And it's a contest between Army and Navy. If you've never watched a Sprint football game, start this weekend. It's going to be pretty good. I believe it'll be on ESPN. If they broadcast it. If not, they'll be on one of the two respective Academy Sports channels, and you'll be able to see the game. That one's going to be high scoring. I don't know if you've watched it, but like, if you want to see some old school throwback football, a mix of old and new, watch the Sprint football game this Saturday. I believe it kicks at 6 o'clock on ESPN.
Pretty sure that's on the plus.
Yeah. Oh, it's on the plus. Yeah.
But most of the time it's on the plus.
Yeah, for sure. But either way, it's going to be a great football contest. And if you want to get some football other than your standard fare on a Saturday, I definitely want to check that out. But for the crew here at the Aspen Football College Football Roundtable or just Gulf Spring Knocker Radio, I'm your host, Rob the Angry Colonel, calling to you out of Hawaii. We've got Dano Ikebesa calling to you out of the coastal Connecticut, and Trigger Joe from the home of the Big House. We are at week 12. My goodness. We've got about 87 more weeks of college football as we get into the playoff bracket, but the regular season is almost over. And we're here to give you guys coverage and continue to pump this up. So we will talk to you guys next week, and always beat the bye week.
Beat them.
Thanks for joining us on the Aspen Football College Football Roundtable. Special thanks to our sponsor, Jocelyn Bradley Real Estate. If you're buying or selling, reach out to Jocelyn for expert service. If you enjoy the show, please consider supporting us on Patreon at patreon.com/AspenFootball. Your support will help keep the lights on and bring in more great content. Plus, you'll get access to exclusive perks and behind-the-scenes extras. Thanks for being a part of the Aspen Football community. Go Army, beat Navy, and we'll catch you guys next week.